This is Summer Grandstand on ABC Sport with Sam Lane and Limo. On your radio, ABC Sport Digital, and on the ABC Listen app.
And as you mentioned before, Sam, occasionally a sports story really slaps you in the face. The Essendon supplement saga, Melbourne Storm salary cap, Lance Armstrong cheating.
Yep.
Tiger Woods cheating in a different kind of way.
Well, yeah.
Now, this story is huge. And I was stunned last night when I read that Jannik Sinner had accepted a 3-month ban for doping. So very quick timeline for people. Yep. Tested positive in March last year at the Indian Wells tournament. Tested positive again 9 days later out of competition. The International Tennis Integrity Agency took the matter to an independent tribunal in August. I have no idea why these things take so long. Sinner blamed a trainer who'd given him a massage after treating a cut with an ointment containing the banned substance.
Yeah.
I mean, that just feels like a stretch.
Not once, but twice.
Feels like a stretch to me. The Tennis Integrity Agency accepted Sinner's story and cleared him. The play, WADA appealed, and the case was due to be heard in April. And they were seeking, apparently, at least a 1-year ban. In the meantime, Sinner won the Australian Open like this.
Championship point. Sits up. Backhand Zverev. Backhand from Sinner. Zverev on the backhand. Hits it to the backhand side of Sinner. Goes down the line. Forehand Zverev. Backhand into the corner from Sinner. Getting it back on the backhand. Now a forehand again from Zverev. Drop shot. Sinner. Zverev pushes it back. Backhand Sinner. He's got it.
Sinner.
Jannik Sinner is once again the Australian Open champion.
There he is, just a few weeks ago. And now him and his team have sat down with WADA and negotiated a 3-month ban, which conveniently means he won't miss any major tournaments. He's back just in time to play a lead-up tournament before the French Open. To talk us through this case and the many complexities surrounding it, sports lawyer Paul Horvath, welcome to Summer Grandstand.
Good afternoon, Limo. Good afternoon, Sam.
Now,
hi, Paul.
Paul, Nick Kyrgios has called this a sad day for tennis. Do you agree?
Not at all. I think you do need to, and with all due respect to Nick, he's certainly entitled to his opinion. I feel that these cases need a bit to be digested, and you need to understand, that, as you say, the complexities of these cases, the way that WADA operate and their considerations, and obviously the athlete and their team. So there's, a number of factors. Perhaps if I could just take 2 minutes of your time to talk your listeners through a couple of the basic rules around these cases.
Sure.
If you might indulge me.
Yep.
So when you test positive to a substance such as the one that Sinner tested positive to, your starting point is firstly that you are presumed guilty. Not presumed innocent, you're presumed guilty. And unless you, the athlete, can prove a case, you are getting 4 years ban. That's it. If you can show that you did not intentionally take the drug, then that reduces it to 2 years. And in this case, Sinner was able to establish clear evidence, according to the authorities, as to where it came from. That gets him down to 2 years. And in comparison, Shayna Jack got her case down to 2 years through a narrow defence that is open, where you can show that you've been a very clean athlete and you get good references, and you can show that all of your other indicators, such as negative blood tests over a long period of time, point to innocence. So this is your 2-year threshold. She couldn't get it down any further. In this case, Sinner could. So you can then get that 2 years down to 12 months if you can show there was no significant fault or negligence. So in other words, some level of fault. And you can further get it down to no fault or negligence. So a very low level of culpability or responsibility gets you 0 to 12 months. And I read in the papers yesterday that WADA were arguing in their paperwork for between 12 and 24 months, so the no significant fault or negligence in this case. And so they did a deal, and I've done deals in some other cases where fortunately the penalty that is acceptable to all parties risks both ways if the case runs, happens to fall, in this case, between majors. So to my thinking, that's probably good work on the part of his legal team, and it's just the luck of the way the case falls on the day.
So then, Paul, are you saying that you reject the notion, and former British number one Tim Henman is one who has put it on the record that he sees this ban as, quote, too convenient, unquote, in terms of the timing?
I don't think it's about timing, Sam. I think that, you know, there's a lot of factors, as you say, and as Limo mentioned in the introduction, these cases take an awfully long time. And, you know, look at Shayna Jacks, was 18 to 24 months from start to conclusion. So to pick a timeline that suits anyone is very, very difficult, in my opinion and in my experience, to do. I think that, you know, and it also depends at what point. What if the negotiated outcome that WADA would have accepted was 6 months? That would have taken him out of the French Open. And so maybe his team didn't know that beforehand. And I think he got no ban in the first place. So, you know, that's it's a win-win, I suppose, on one view. But, I mean, one of the cases I want to compare it to, which you and your listeners may recall, is Richard Gasquet's case, which is referred to as the cocaine kiss case, where Richard Gasquet put on a very expensive defence with lawyers, obviously senior lawyers, very experienced scientists, to say that he kissed a girl in a nightclub. She had snorted cocaine through the nose. There were traces of cocaine that then reached his lips, and he tested positive the next day to cocaine, and it was accepted in that case that he did not use the cocaine. So, I mean, it's rightly or wrongly, these cases are just taking the doping system all the way and putting forward all the arguments that everyone should be able to do.
So it feels like you're just testing your luck on the day with your excuse or your story.
I look
at Richard Gasquet, and I don't know that I'm not. It doesn't pass the pub test to me, that Richard Gasquet excuse. Yet they accepted it.
So I think you've got to dig into these things a little bit, and I do accept that some of the cases and excuses, certainly which have been rejected, seem far fetched. Quick example was Michael Rogers, who was an Australian cyclist caught testing positive to steroids in China. He was initially banned for about 4 months, and then it was found that the usual meat that they sell in the shops and restaurants there are tainted with steroids, and new rules have been brought in for eating meat in those countries. So it looked like he was a drug and steroid cheat, particularly with what was going on in cycling. And then lo and behold, it's turned out that it was a legitimate explanation through the meats, which has been used in numerous other cases. In the case of Richard Gasquet, they went so far as to employ private detectives who tracked down this girl that he kissed. She was at the time on something like a community service program for drug use, and they were able to find out that she had a cocaine problem, and so there was quite positive evidence about all of these things happening, including very low concentrations of the cocaine in Richard's system when the test was done the next day after the nightclub, so within, you know, 12, 14 hours or something. And if he'd taken the cocaine himself, it would have been at much higher concentrations, for example.
Mm. Paul, do you accept, amidst this atmosphere where there are people who are prominent and they're current and former tennis players and a whole lot of other people besides, saying that Sinner here is getting preferential treatment because he's too precious to the sport, he's number one, and yet we have the head of the International Tennis Federation saying the way we manage cases does not change irrespective of the profile of the player involved. Do you accept that as God-honest truth when we know not too long ago World Cycling, for instance, was doing everything it could to protect the image and the poster boy for their sport, which was Lance Armstrong?
Yeah. Now, look, it's a good question. And to my thinking, there is at times some politics that can come into play in world sport. And Exhibit A probably is the Chinese 23 doping case that happened, I think it was last year. It came largely to prominence just before the Paris Olympics. The suggestion was that China was important to the Olympic movement and hence WADA and funding and so forth. To a lesser extent was also Sun Yang and him testing positive and whether he was getting off and so on. But ultimately, he served a ban. The Chinese 23 didn't. Some people ask questions about that, and we've got to move on to some extent. So I do think that at times there is some politics at play as to whether some people seem to get preferential treatment. But I think that's a matter for common sense and for people much smarter than me to debate those things and to argue that it should change. I mean, as a lawyer, I have to work within the system. I can only advise my clients on what the system is and how I can seek to get the best result for them in any individual case.
We are talking to sports lawyer Paul Horvath. And Paul, you mentioned there that in these types of cases, you are presumed guilty until proven innocent, which is not something we're not used to hearing. If that's the case then, because he tested positive twice in March last year, yet he went on to play all the way through until August when that there was that initial hearing where he was cleared by the tennis authorities.
Yeah, so usually the doping authorities, whether it's the International Tennis Integrity Agency in this case, usually are required to impose a provisional suspension. You can apply to have that provisional suspension lifted for certain reasons. For example, if there's a contaminated supplement or in certain other cases. I'm not sure what was the case there. I haven't heard about Jannik Sinner's case. But in any case, he obviously went on and kept playing. One of the things that the authorities can do in reaching a penalty is to then exclude penalties and prize money that have been earned within a particular time frame, whether that's from the date that the person tested positive until the date the ban's concluded or something like that. As I understand it, in this case, none of that is going to take place. And again, I can only say that without knowing the intricacies of that negotiation, it was a good result on behalf of Sinner not to have any of his prize money stripped or otherwise. In saying that, I'm often acting for athletes. And again, Shayna Jack is someone who I think there's a huge amount of sympathy for. I don't think anyone would think that she's a cheat in any way or thinks that she got away with it. Indeed, I would suggest the contrary, that she spent a hell of a lot more time suspended than would be fair and appropriate in the case. And so, rightly or wrongly, sometimes there's swings and roundabouts. And I think that if you accept Sinner's explanation and argument in this case, which he no doubt put forward evidence, he had to talk about the lengths that he went to scrutinise his team of therapists and advisors. And so far as he knew, he had asked the question of the particular physio involved in this case, have you been taking anything, which he said no for his finger cut, which was true at the time, but subsequently changed and Jannik just wasn't updated. And so it was a question of whether he did the best and took all of the steps he could at the time. Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing is with the defences of no significant fault and no fault, you have to show exceptional and compelling circumstances. So again, that's also a high bar that you're expected to meet. So I guess, you know, without seeing all of the evidence, you assume that he's met those tests. And so, convince the authorities.
You talk about not losing any prize money. He earned over 80 million Australian dollars last year. So it certainly didn't hold him back on the money front, I got to say. Let's have a listen to what Andy Roddick had to say about this overnight.
You play the first major, you win it, and then you take a little, you know, siesta, and then you continue on with a week, you know, a warm-up tournament in Rome, and then you don't, you miss no majors. The timeline is borderline laughable.
Sort of reflecting Tim Henman's comments there, Sam,
yeah,
as well.
Indeed. Paul, I want to ask your opinion and what you'd predict, if you don't mind, about the support personnel involved here. And many people in Australia listening will remember the scrutiny. And in fact, it really was, it was beyond hot in the Essendon doping case with the support personnel involved. Here we have a trainer, Yannick Sinner's fitness trainer and physiotherapist, who were sacked or released, whatever word you want to use, by Sinner last year after this doping charge emerged. But as I understand it so far, they are not in the gun, so to speak, with WADA. How could that be so?
Yeah, look, I wasn't aware whether that person had been charged or not, Sam. I had heard that they had been terminated fairly promptly. So I would think that in the normal course that that person should be charged. But the only case that comes to my mind from a long time ago was a breaststroker in 97 who took a headache tablet or something, whose name just escapes me at the moment. And I think she got a 7-month ban or something, and her coach got rubbed out for a couple of years. But
sports littered with these stories. I mean, the trainers of Lance Armstrong, for instance, were also, they were banned. They're banned from sport. I cannot understand, and I'm sure people that followed the AFL case would be saying, well, hang on, is this not the same? Like, it literally, as I'm reading it here, the physiotherapist applied the over-the-counter spray in question, but that spray was given to him by the trainer.
I mean, obviously that doesn't directly impact on Yannick and his case and what penalties should be applied or imposed in his case. I agree with you that common sense suggests that that trainer should be charged or penalised or scrutinised for their conduct, because it's a clear breach of, and I think the rules clearly apply to, what is it called, athlete support personnel these days.
That's it, yeah. And it would would be unfathomable. And in fact, you know, we're talking about how this sort of, there are so many things in this that seem to smell, and that's smelly to me as well. I mean, that just doesn't add up to my understanding of how it works. And in saying that, clearly Yannick Sinner, and he's number one in the world, if he doesn't know that he must be responsible for every single thing that he ingests, that he's put on him, every kind of treatment, then, I don't know who should know it better, actually, than the world number one in men's tennis. I heard on the ABC Offsiders today, Tess Madgen saying that she used to be really mindful of buying a protein shake just in case there was something in the shake.
Well, we saw players at the Australian Open who wouldn't treat insect bites because they were worried what might be on the spray or ointment of the treatment of an insect bite. Paul, we'll let you go in a moment, but just to recap on the negotiation with WADA, you talk about the bans of penalties, the 4-year penalty, the 2 to 4 year penalty, the 1 to 2 year penalty, and he managed to negotiate due to a range of factors for it to be between 0 and 12 months, and he ended up with 3 months. Are there sort of strict guidelines in there that determine, well, if you tick this box, and this box, it's 3, or is it just up to the panel to decide where it sits between 0 and 12 months?
I guess the simple answer is that it's by comparison to the cases that have been decided, and you say, well, my case sits within this case here, or my case sits within that case. There was a case about 20 years ago, it's called Squizzato, which was a swimming case very similar to this one, where the mother of this Italian swimmer had bought the daughter a steroidal cream to treat a leg injury in a foreign country. No idea it contained particular substances. There was labelling on the packaging which she couldn't read properly, and she applied the substance to the daughter and she got 12 months. under the system then. So obviously there's different cases, different penalties, and that was a long time ago under a different doping system. But there's lots of comparisons that you draw from cases. So to answer your question, you look at the way cases have been decided before, and in particular, the evidence that you're able to put forward in your case.
Yeah.
And again, going back to Shayna Jack, she just couldn't point to where the substance came from. She had some theories, but that doesn't get you below the two-year threshold. Whereas in this case, because it was accepted fairly clearly, no doubt this physio was able to show a receipt from where he bought the substance or the cream that he used on his finger. He would have had the packaging. So all of that hard evidence that he was able to show, Sinner was able to say in a statement, I didn't know he was taking it. I'd asked him. He said, no, I'm not taking anything. And then the positive tests happened after that point, and it was accepted that he did everything reasonable in his power to try and make sure that nothing was going to be able to contaminate his blood system or his physical domain.
A number of people on the SMS asking the question, should he lose his Australian Open title?
Oh, look, I mean, I don't think so at all, because I think that the way that the ban has been worked out is, other people may know better than me, but if the agreement is for a penalty of 3 months for a period that he will step out of the sport, the basis for banning, in my view, a previously earned title in whatever sport of whatever type is on the theory that you had a performance advantage when you competed in that event. Is there any suggestion or evidence that he had any such benefit when he was competing in the Australian Open? I would doubt that very much. Would he have been tested fairly regularly between the time of his first sample, I think you said back in March 2024 and now? Absolutely. And I would have thought he would have had more tests than most. And so I would have thought he's absolutely clean when he's performing at the Australian Open. But that's, I understand the sentiment from people, but that's how I understand the rules as well.
So, Paul, just to summarise, and we've had a broad-ranging conversation, so thank you for that, but could I just pinpoint you on this?
Yeah.
Is there anything concerning from what you've read and understand, given your knowledge of anti-doping law and, in fact, your experience in representing in anti-doping law, about this Sinner case?
No. The thing about this case is that what it illustrates on one level is the difference between athletes that are able to get the best representation and, in particular, scientific evidence to support their case. Because once you can do those things and put that forward before the tribunals, and my experience is that the members of the Court of Arbitration for Sport often and other anti-doping tribunals generally look at the evidence pretty closely and aren't easily convinced, certainly in Australia, where I think one of the toughest nations in the world in terms of anti-doping, that he's been fortunate in being able to put all of that evidence forward. I guess it just highlights for, let's say you're an amateur athlete, whether you're on the national basketball team or a softball team or whatever, and you get into the same situation, can you put forward that sort of defence? If you haven't got a rich family, of course not. And that's the disparity in the system. And that's where, whether it's an athlete legal aid system in this country is needed or something like that, just so that people can put proper defences forward in circumstances where the case starts with a presumption of guilt.
Well, I think there'll be plenty more discussion around this suspension over the next few weeks. But in the meantime, Paul Horvath, thank you for joining us on Summer Grandstand. We appreciate your insights.
Absolute Thanks, pleasure, Limo and Sam. Thank you for having me.
Summer Grandstand on ABC Sport with Sam Lane and Limo. On your radio, ABC Sport Digital, and on the ABC Listen app.